Blog Talk Radio.
Radio, and this is The Cosmic Citizen. My name is Paula Thompson. I'm your host, and with me are my dear friends. Yes, they're both with me today. I am so happy. We have both Andre Rodatis and Crystalline Beek Larson. Welcome back, Crystalline.
Hello, Paula, and welcome back, Crystalline.
Yeah, thank you.
Welcome.
Good morning, everybody.
So good to have you all with us, and we have a special show planned today. We have some friends who have called in who actually found the Urantia book online. The advent of the internet is an amazing and remarkable thing. Just changed our world forever for the better, in my estimation. And both of these people found were searching for higher truth and higher meaning, and they found it online. And I have Ranjini Rashan. How do you say your name, sweetheart? What's the proper pronunciation of your name?
My name is Ranjini Rashan.
Ah, okay. And all of us who know and love you simply call you Angel.
Yeah.
Because you are an earth, angel, and Angel is calling us all the way from India. So if she sounds far away, it's because she is. And Angel, if the folks on the board will help us sometimes to get some clarity. If they can't hear you, they'll let us know, and we may ask you to speak a little louder or something, if that's okay.
Okay.
Okay. And Angel has requested that I open our show today with a prayer. And so I'm certainly more than happy and honored to do that. So let's take a moment. Just get still and silent. We'll open our hearts. Open our hearts to the great divine heart. Something within the great divine heart is touched just by knowing that we love to be in his presence, just by knowing that in our little childhood of spirituality, we acknowledge his greatness and his love, and we trust him, and we know that all that he does, all that the Father of all does, is for our ultimate good. And Father, in the center of all things, we so honor you. We so thank you for bringing these precious souls to a place where they could find a greater truth about your nature and your love and your strength and your infinite upholding of all that is true, beautiful, and good. And Master Jesus, thank you for bringing this sweet soul who loves you so and is dedicated to living your life and teachings. Our precious angel, thank you for bringing her on the show with us today. And for all of our friends, near and far, who celebrate the reality of your being with us, even so may it be. Amen.
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 So, Angel, we also have our friend from London on the phone with us, and I'm going to go ahead and put him on as well. He also found the Urantia book online, and this is Sean Toner. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the
Hi,
show
Paula.
Again.
Hi, Paula. How are you?
Good to have you.
Well, thanks for bringing me in.
Oh, of course. So we are wanting to ask our friend Angel. Angel, how did you how were you raised, Angel? You were you're a Hindu and you live in India. Tell us a little bit about your story and how you grew up.
My family is a Hindu family, and my parents' family is very Orthodox Hindu, my parents' family is in Tamil Nadu state, and we live in Kerala, which is a different state. And here we just live in it's a rented house, and there is a good family with us. Her name is Rebecca, and she's a Christian. So in my school days, we just like to take me to the church. And 5 years I went to church regularly, and I tried to this Mother Mary and the blessed. And then I turned into Hindu religion, very strong faith, Hindu gods, a number of gods. Then after, when I was in college, I again realized this through my neighbor. Her name is Lali. She's a minister. And when I was 19, I received in my life. And this my whole life. And I'm now dedicating my whole life.
And you you went to see a movie, right? And the movie was The Passion of the Christ?
Yes.
Was that pivotal? Was that something that... Can you hear us, hon?
Okay. I just started to study the Bible, but one day I just watched the movie, The Passion of the Christ. And that movie really touched my heart, especially the scenes of the weakness with his mother and his childhood memories. And I started to search in the Bible about Jesus' childhood. We don't have very much details in it. I asked it to several people, my history professors, ministers, priests, and they don't know anything about that. Then I searched on the internet about Jesus' childhood, and I got a link to truthbook.com. And I just read that part. I didn't understand anything because English was my second language in school, and Iranian was a little bit difficult to understand. So I sent mails to them and asked them about where did you get this information and what is this, and just like that. And Grandpa just replied to me. And so I just every day I just started to read a small paragraph, and I asked him several questions, and he helped me to understand that part. And then he sent a bunch of books to me, and we started it. We started the study together on Skype.
So you study.
I'm sorry, I'll find. Huh?
Crystalline, did you have a question? I thought I heard you try to jump
in.
No,
I didn't say anything.
Oh, okay. You study two or three times a week with your our dear friend. You call him Grandpa. We all know him as Larry.
Yes. Yes,
Larry Watkins. And just so our listeners know, you know, Larry has been a tireless helper with this show, The Cosmic Citizen, from the very beginning. Larry created a page, a bio page for us, for all of our guests, and he's just been a wonderful help with The Cosmic Citizen from the very beginning. So, and he's on the board with us today. Hey, Larry, it's so good to see you on the board again. And he's been studying with Angel John every week for 4 years now, Angel?
Yes, every day.
Every day?
Yes.
You and Grandpa, you call him Grandpa, so for the sake of our listeners, we'll refer to him as Grandpa. You meet via Skype every day to study the life and teachings of Jesus from the Urantia book?
Yes, every day morning. Every day morning for Grandpa's time, and every day in my time. Almost 6 hours every day.
Wow.
Well, my hat's off to you, Larry.
That's quite dedicated.
It is. And, you know, and I should mention to Sean, too, you know, Sean, Angel invites anybody who wants to join in on this study group with her and Grandpa. And Larry is a longtime student of the Urantia book. I think Larry has read for at least 35 years and studied faithfully. And he started working with me at truthbook.com. In fact, Larry and I created the original version of Truthbook, a site that we called jesusonian.org. And that was back in 1996. And we started it, just so you know, with a very simple philosophy. I was searching online one day for Jesus, just to see what was out there about Jesus, because as you both know, as you all know, the Urantia book has the most exquisite story of Jesus anywhere, I think. And it's so rich and it's so splendid and so satisfying. As somebody who always loved Jesus and wanted to know about Jesus, I found so much satisfaction in the Urantia book story of Jesus. And I was searching online, and all I could find was Christianity and various websites about big churches and how you could join in their various programs. But ironically, none of these sites said anything about Jesus. And I guess it was just at this point, it's just assumed that you know the story of Jesus, so you're not really searching for more information about Jesus. You want to get involved with the church about Jesus.
Right.
And I called my friend Larry up, and I said, Larry, you know, it's really sad. I knew Larry knew something about web design, and it was in its infancy back then, and it was basically HTML, but Larry knew HTML. And I said, wouldn't it be great if when a person searched for Jesus, they actually found Jesus? They actually found his teachings, his parables, his discourses, his remarkable life. Wouldn't it be wonderful to create a site all about Jesus? And Larry was totally on board with that. And so he and I set out to create this site where people who were searching for Jesus could find him. And Larry, this is just by way of acknowledgement to you, my friend, because our precious angel did exactly that. And isn't that wonderful? I mean, you know, as somebody who has worked tirelessly to make the teachings of this remarkable book available to the world, there's something so gratifying about knowing that Angel John found the Urantia book online because of our effort. So, bravo. And bravo, Angel, for searching and finding Jesus at truthbook.com. It's a wonderful site.
What, can you tell us a little bit about how you felt? What were your first experiences of finding that site and that information about Jesus?
I love Jesus a lot. I love him more than anything in this world. So it's study about his life, people that have been able to be really interesting. And it really inspired me a lot. Bible has a short description about lots of goodness, which is pretty remarkable, with a long description about, and I really like that, especially about the personal relationship with the Father in Heaven. And after I read the Urantia book, it helped me a lot to make that relationship more stronger and more personal. And also that prayer chapter, and I love that part very much. And with this life, I never think about, I read about John, the Baptist part in the Bible, but I never think, I know they are related, but their family relationship, I didn't think about those kind of things. But when I read that, I thought, more meaningful now, and Joseph's death, and Jesus and his mother to John, and that part, and that is meaningful. All those are very, very meaningful after I read that event. And that helped me a lot, and I now I still have my prayer group members to understand that more. They are not very much, they don't know English. They are all housewives and they don't have very much. So I help them to understand an old language. More things. That's the Bible.
So you say you have a prayer group?
Yes, we have a prayer group and the interested and stayed in their prayers, fellowshipping.
Wow.
And I am, we have a prayer meeting every weekend, but I don't get much freedom to participate all of them. And I only participate once in a month and second Saturday near my home. My father don't allow me to go to other prayer meetings or churches, so I'm using that opportunity to develop my relationship with the Father more and more.
So, Sean, how did you stumble on the Urantia book online?
Well, just before I say that, I just want to just make a quick comment about what Angel was saying. Unfortunately, I couldn't hear it too well, the gist of it, but just by a coincidence, I was at a wedding yesterday and I got chatting to a man from Sri Lanka, you know, and we were talking about religion, and it's interesting that Hindus seem to have the Hindu faith seems very broad-minded and seems willing to accept concepts from other religions. So I don't know whether that was something that was helpful to Angel. I think, you know, that obviously she's come from a Hindu background, and but it's to me that the Hindu faith seems open-minded to accepting concepts from other religions. So that's just one comment I wanted to make.
the Rancho book actually affirms that. And I think of all of the religions on earth, the Hindus are most accepting.
Yeah.
Of other religions.
Yeah. It was funny because I at this wedding yesterday it was a very busy event and I just overheard this conversation on the subject of Hinduism and Christianity and how the two had an overlap. I thought, oh, I need to join that conversation. I couldn't resist myself. And then so it's interesting just to hear Angel's comments. But in answer to your question, how did I come across it? I heard of the Urantia book just on podcasts, but actually not really particularly religious podcasts. I guess I would describe them as New Age ones. The first one, I heard a reference to it about 7-8 years ago and literally just heard the name, the Urantia book, but with no explanation of what it was. And for some reason, it just caught my attention and I thought, oh, I wonder what that is. But I didn't even know how to spell the name Urantia, so I couldn't search for it on Google and it just sort of got buried at the back of my memory. And then about 4 months ago, I heard it mentioned again on another podcast. Unfortunately, this time I managed to get it entered into Google, and then I think then after doing a Google search, I found your podcast, Paula, and that was it. And just the bulk of my study of the Urantia book has come from your podcast. The vast majority of it, I would say, yours and the other podcast, which is called Symmetry of Soul, but primarily your podcast. I say yours, obviously it's Crystalin and Andre as well. I don't mean to diminish their input, but I mean the Cosmic Citizen podcast.
Us Cosmic Citizens.
That's it.
Well,
we're
striving to be. But certainly fall short many times, but it's something to strive for and something worth achieving too.
Yeah.
Angel, I'm getting on the board that you are a little bit hard to hear. So if you can speak a little louder and maybe just
okay,
a little slower.
Okay.
Maybe a little slower, it would help. I would love for you to respond to Sean's comment about Hinduism. Do you believe that's true in your experience? Is it true that your family and friends, say, have been tolerant of this sudden acceptance of Jesus in your life and this love of Jesus that you have?
In our area, I think Hindu people easily accept Jesus, but it's difficult for all the people. And I faced lots of trouble from my home. My papa didn't allow me to read Bible in the day, and usually I just hide Bible from him, and it's very hard for me to pray to Jesus all the time. So I just lay on bed and I hold my Bible and then cover me up with the blanket, and I just pray to God for almost one year just like that. And then one day he found it, and he just said to me that he will burn my Bible. I didn't say anything, and just pray to God. And after maybe 1.5 years, he called me one day. One day he called me and told me that it's okay, just pray to Jesus, and you don't want to go under your blanket now. Just pray openly. And since then, I used to pray to God without any troubling. Papa don't second me after that. But he don't allow me to go to other prayer meetings and stuff like that. Only one meeting every month. That is the Lali song. That means it's Lali Joyce, and he's the minister of our Saving Their Prayer Fellowship group. That is only prayer meeting. And I'm sorry for my English. I hope you all understand that.
Well, I'm getting some of it. It's not your English, I don't think. It's just the fact that you're so far away, and it's a little hard to hear. Like I said, if you could slow down just a little bit And maybe think about overpronouncing your words. It would help a lot. So essentially what you said is that your father, was it your father that found your Bible?
Yes, and he didn't allow me to pray to God because he said he's a Hindu and this is Hindu family. You can't pray to God, Jesus, or you can go up to for Christianity.
So that's interesting to me, Angel, that we know that Hinduism can be practiced as a very tolerant religion in some ways, but you're telling us that the way it's very often practiced day to day is that in this particular case, your interest in non-Hindu beliefs was taken as a threat to the family religion in some way. Is that right?
Yes.
What do you think your father was particularly concerned about or afraid about? What do you think he was feeling? Have you come to understand something of what was going on since then?
His family is an Orthodox Hindu family, so they have their own temples and their own way for some kind of puja in Tamil Nadu. He don't follow those kind of things here, but still his mind is filled with those Hindu religious gods, Lord Shiva, Krishna, and just like that. So it's a little bit difficult for him to accept that I say this and I don't go to temples.
Sure. I'm wondering, have you found ways of adapting how you speak about this to your family? For instance, I know of some Hindus who have referred to Krishna as an incarnation of Christ, even though that may be a stretch from the Christian side of things. Some Hindus have come to look at Krishna as an incarnation of Christ. Were you able to use those kinds of techniques of talking about how you believed, or did you have a different approach to your family?
Well, I don't believe that. I didn't hear about that study. I didn't hear about Krishna thing.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's anything I believe that Christians would believe, but I know that I've heard of some Hindus saying that trying to bridge between Hindu and Christian concepts, that's one way they've tried to do that. So what I hear you saying is that that was not an option for you to try to bridge a concept like that. So how did you then, how did you approach your family, and how have things been changing in your family toward you and your beliefs?
Here in my family, my mother received Jesus first, then my brother and sister. I am the final one, and at that time I was rejected continuously. We have lots of troubles in our family because my father was a drunken person, so lots of problems in our family. My mother just went to the prayer meeting because of that, and she received this and a prayer, her prayer to God herself. Then it changed my brother and sister, and at that time I said, our family is not going to change. I don't believe any God anymore. But slowly, God came into my home and he talked to me about Jesus and gave me a Bible. And I first I read Psalm 23. When I read that, it just really talked to me. Lord is my shepherd. It really touched my heart. then I would serve slowly, talk to God, and that I feel as peace in my mind. And then I just started to pray to God in the morning and evening and started to talk to Him. And I feel a very big change in my family and in my life. But my mother, brother, and sister don't have a strong relationship just like me. They love Jesus, and they used to keep their Bible, and they do their work. It's just like that.
So you've you know, I think this really touches on an important thing, and I'd like to get Sean's feedback here as well, and I know we all could probably speak to this. You know, it's one thing to be religiously tolerant of other people's faith, but when your child or your wife or your husband starts to believe in something that you really don't believe in, and it, you know, maybe it seems very strange, very foreign. This is not something that your family traditionally ever believed in, as in the case with an Orthodox Hindu family, as Angel was describing her own family. It's a hard pill to swallow. And that is where probably the rubber of tolerance meets the road. When, you know, your own child has become, I guess for me, this is going to sound strange, but for me, if my one of my children became of a fundamental Christian and all of a sudden totally abhorred my love of the Urantia book, it would be very strange for me. And, you know, it's a challenge. It can be a challenge. Sean, have you found this? I mean, we know I have other dear friends whose relationships, their marital relationships, have been deeply strained by the fact that they believe in the Urantia book, for instance.
It's funny. It's so strange we're having this conversation, because this is a very similar conversation that I had yesterday at the wedding. And just to explain it, the people I was talking to, they were a married couple. The husband is a Hindu guy from Sri Lanka, and his wife is British. So she's obviously come from a sort of a British Christian type background. He's obviously from a fairly strict Hindu background, and obviously the caste system has a part to play in this. But interestingly, this is the point we touched on that you've just mentioned, that I mean, there's, I think you have to look at two sides to this, and it also touches on what Andre said, which is from, you know, a theological perspective, in Hinduism is, you know, is a broad church, but you have to then look at the social situation in an individual town or village where somebody sort of steps out of line and decides to embrace, you know, a religious ideas that don't necessarily fit in with that local culture, and that I think can create strains in a society. I'm not suggesting that was what happened in Angel's case, but that's certainly the conversation I was having yesterday with the Hindu gentleman that I was speaking to, that, as I said, whilst that there is in theory Hinduism is a broad church, like with any society, if you decide to break any of the mores in the society, you can get there can be pushback.
Yes, and it gets emotional. I mean, whenever religion gets involved, it seems to me like it gets pushed up to another level of intensity, because people are very passionate and emotional about what they believe, and especially I think parents and children, you know. Certainly, culture has a lot to do with that, and we know that's probably true in the Hindu culture. But Angel has shared with me at other times that her persistent and patient love of Jesus and her willingness to just bring that gentleness, because Angel is a very gentle person. Everything I know about you, Angel, you're very sweet and gentle. and even-tempered. And you have shared with me that through persistence and just being patient with your family and loving, it has really changed them in a way, and it has changed their perception about Jesus. Is this true? Do you find this to be true?
Yes.
You I think you once told me that your father is not as angry as he used to be. And in many ways, you're bringing the life and teachings of Jesus into your family life has really made life better for everybody within the family.
Yes, that's true. Because when I was in college, my school, I was a very angry person, very emotional. I made lots of trouble in my family because sometimes I used to fight with my brother and sister and mother. Because every night, my father used to make lots of trouble, my problems, a fight with my mother. And in the daytime, Mama used to fight with us. Because maybe she don't know how to express her feelings. So all of them are just, I don't know, it's a family. I just felt like some people just living in a house. But when he just came to my life, I feel like I just want to forgive my father, and I started to love him. Whatever he did, I used to forgive him. Whatever he's doing, I love him a lot, and then I pray to God that he is my father and my family. And when I changed, I think my brother and sister also looked at my life. They have this, but they don't know how to express or express that he's not in their life. So I helped them. I didn't tell them more about Jesus, but I just told them through my life. My patience, my love, those kind of things helped them. I think that helped them a lot. And they started to share their troubles with me. And we used to hold our hands together and pray to God for that. And then we get answer of that prayer with their hands together. And that made their faith also increase like that.
Well, tell us a little bit about Lolly. Am I pronouncing her name right? Lolly.
Yes, it
Jose?
Jose.
She's a minister, and you mentioned her briefly that she lives next door to you, and is she a Christian minister?
Yes, she's a minister. Their family is a PSA family, and she's a minister. And then she came to next door to our house, and she just changed the all the city. And here we are, 90% of the people are Hindu people. Very few Christians are here, and she met everybody personally and talked to them and asked them about their problems and gave Jesus to their life. But maybe 99% of the people, they used to receive God in their life. But after they got a church in their, or a change in their family, they just said to us that we are Hindus. It's difficult for us to change our mind. But we will pray and keep the Bible in our hands. But very few people started to love God and like to know about Him and share His love to other people. So religion is, I think, strong here. Because if you have a daughter, then we think about their marriage. Religion and caste is very important. In marriage. So most of the grandparents decided that, we can't go to church or pray to people. If I knew that I don't get any proposal from
Go ahead.
So I'm curious. So this is how things have worked, you know, in the family. Curious how you get this to work then in the wider culture. How you're actually getting to win some of your friends and acquaintances to a love of Jesus. You know, we're told in the Arantia book that, you know, many people look at Christianity as a Western religion, and for Westerners, because of the nature of Jesus' portrayal in Christianity. Are you able to somehow take some of what you've learned in the Arantia book and make Jesus more approachable to some of your friends in your culture, and how do you do that?
My two friends, one is Isidro, her name is Maya, and another one is Isidro. And they have, in 2006, I was a student, so from the, you know, 20 to 25, that age is very important for Hindus and the Muslims for their marriage. And my friends got lots of proposals, but they have some trouble, so no marriage happened. So both of them are really worried about that. But I'm just a half year that then because I have Jesus and I'm not disappointed. So when they were worried about our life, I started to talk to them about Jesus. It is easy to talk to a Hindu person about Jesus, but it is very difficult to talk to a Muslim, because they are very, very orthodox people. But I just, I talked to my friend, and she asked me that, we feel a change on you, what happened to you, because, you know, my school, I was a little bit angry person. Suddenly a change, they felt a change, so they just asked me that, what happened to you. So I told them about Jesus. First then she told me that, oh no, we can. But then slowly I just talked to them about, I didn't say anything about the story. I said about how Jesus changed my life and how Jesus changed my family. So they just wanted to know more about it. And then I talked to them a lot. I gave them a New Testament Bible. They prayed to God. Their marriage happened, and both of them have children now. And a few months before, I just met my friends, and I asked them about, are you praying to now? They said, no, but because we are in our husband's family, they are very orthodox about all this. Okay. So most of them are just... they need an answer for their problem, and after that, probably they can, maybe, not can, but they don't want to follow or just keep.
Are you able to share much of the gospel message as Jesus taught it? The idea that God is our loving Father, and therefore all men and women are brothers and sisters. Are you able to do that in the context of your sharing, or do you need to stay to tell us exactly how you're doing this?
About how do I talk to them?
Right. Are you able to share some of the gospel message that Jesus taught about God being everyone's Father, and therefore all men and women being brothers and sisters. Is that easy to share?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is it received
yes, it is.
Well?
What?
I mean that.
Did you say yes? It is easy to share.
I just, you know, I shared that message to my prayer group members, but it's difficult to talk to that kind of thing to a Hindu or a Muslim suddenly. Want to give a basement first. Here, our culture, our beliefs, our society is very strange. And if you are talking, you know, I mean, our prayer group members, and 90% of the people are more than 15 years old or 60 years old. Young people always just remain in their positions. Like, girls don't want to think about, oh, if I go to that prayer meeting, probably I don't get any good proposal. So they are feeling that way. Most of them, some people just hide these within their mind.
Well, I would like to ask
that.
I would like to ask the same question of Sean too. Sean, you know, we hear a lot in the United States that Europe is becoming decidedly secular, even atheist. Do you see that?
Yeah, I do. I'll give you another little example. About 2 months ago, I was invited out with some former colleagues from a company that I used to work for. There were two young guys that invited me out, and they're great guys, you know, very, very intelligent guys, doing well in their careers, you know, life's looking good for them. But they're both, I would almost describe them, well, at least one of them I would describe as a sort of a radical atheist. And I do see that. I mean, there's still plenty of people who believe in God in Britain. But I think that the UK, to me, seems, you know, in many cases, just obsessed with money. And, you know, I remember listening to one of your podcasts that you did a while back, and you made I can't remember the exact context of the conversation, but you were talking about this sort of tendency in our society to put people down in a sort of almost like an aggressive humor way, you know, the way sort of comedians like to sort of cut people down. I can't remember the exact way that you described it, and I see that very much in British society. Often if you're out and about in bars, not that I sort of drink much, but, you know, if you're out and about in bars, you just sort of see that a great deal, and that to me seems to be a big part of the way that Britain is these days. It may be that I'm just giving it from my narrow perspective. I'm sure there's plenty of people in the US that sort of take that view, but it seems to me that I try not to raise the subject of spirituality unless I feel that the person has got an interest, because I think you risk just getting ridiculed in many cases.
Mm-hmm. And written off in a way. You know, our friend Michael McIsaac, who lives in Sweden, has expressed the same thing to me, that the most difficult conversation to get in with anybody is a conversation about God. It's just not, you know, it's not accepted. It's not welcomed. It's a different kind of challenge. I mean, you're either facing those of us who kind of hold a new vision of spirituality and maybe a new vision of God. I like to think of the Urantia book as the God you would want to believe in. The Urantia book gives you the God you want to believe in, the God you can believe in. In this world, you're either on one side faced with fundamental belief systems that dictate if you believe about that about God, you're a heretic. And if God doesn't get you, I will, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
I mean,
on the other side, you have secularism and atheism that's saying if you believe in God at all, you're ridiculous. And why should I waste my time with anybody who believes in God? You know, that's just absurd.
Do you, I don't know whether you I'm sure you will have done. Have you heard of Richard Dawkins, the British scientist?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the very atheist scientist.
Yeah, I call him a sort of a radical atheist, and he's, I think one of his books is called The God Delusion, and he's extreme. I think he's a professor at Oxford University, which, as you know, is one of the, is probably the top university in the UK, and I think that's an example of if you profess a belief in God or a belief in anything that can't be proven, in inverted commas, you know, using the so-called scientific method, you can just be dismissed as crazy. Or we have a British expression, is a nutter, is an expression that's used quite often in Britain. So again, I think it's sadly people have to keep their faith private.
That is sad, because we're living in difficult and challenging times around the
world. Yeah, we're living in times where there's more, the need for spirituality is more, you know, is more pronounced now than, well, maybe than it's ever been. There's a desperate need, and I still think people have got a thirst for it, but I think that people are scared to come out and express their opinions. I mean, for example, in Britain, a lot of people like to get married in a church in Britain. And there's a bit of a joke that when people go to the church and they go to see the priest, and the priest sort of looks at them and says, "I've never actually met you before, but yeah, you want me to marry you in a church and perform these religious ceremonies." And in Britain, we've got these beautiful, really old medieval churches, and people like to go to them to get married. And the priest will sort of insist that they come for religious lessons for about 3 months before the wedding. Otherwise, he won't marry them. And you sort of get the impression people are doing this because they've got to. And you know that straight after the wedding, they'll never go back. So very, very strange, strange situation. I don't know if it's the same in the US or in India. I don't know, you know, but that seems to be the way things work in Britain.
There seems to be a lot more openness to religion and religious thought in the United States, partly because of how it's enshrined in the Constitution, because the United States was a haven for those that were religious rejects from Europe.
Yeah.
So that's part of both the genetic and the cultural makeup of the United States. I can tell you that in Canada, where I am right now, it's less so. It's less theistic. In fact, where I am specifically in Quebec right now, which was dominated by the Catholic Church, there is somewhat of a backlash to being able to talk about God, and I'm talking about Francophone culture primarily. I don't know that it's not true in Anglophone culture here as well, but it's just something that is hard to get to. So one of the things that came up on the board was the idea, and I'll elaborate on this myself. My own take on this is that, you know, where there is secularism and atheism, there is a vacuum of something that is essential to the human condition, and that is some God in one's life. And you're either going to put a false God there, something that mirrors you as God, or it's going to allow an open door for those that do believe strongly in God, whatever their religious fervor is. If they have a religious fervor, and it even if it happens to be fundamentalist, there will be an open door there. And one comment was that it seems that this atheistic secular movement on the part of native Europeans, let's say, is allowing for an influx of more fundamentalist religion, particularly Islam and Sharia type Islam.
Can I jump in there?
Yeah, please.
Sure.
Right. Well, I'll give you another little example. As with probably, I'm sure everybody who listens to this podcast, we're all very interested in different religions, and I know a lot of people who have, you know, different religious beliefs, and I know quite a few Muslims in Britain. And here's an interesting anecdote for you. There was a church which is about 50 miles from where I live, which had had to shut down. A Church of England church, which had had to shut down through lack of attendance, and some Muslims very easily raised the money to purchase it, and now they basically turned it into a mosque. Now, I'm not making any comment whether that's a good or a bad thing. I'm not commenting on, you know, the societal impact in the UK, but what struck me was the fact that probably the only growth religion in the UK is Islam. Again, I know that's a very dangerous topic to get into a conversation on, because there's a lot of ill feeling here in the UK on that subject of immigration, and I don't want to get into that. But just purely from a growth a religion, as far as I can see, the only religion strongly in Britain. And I'll also just I'll add another point to that. You'd mentioned the U.S. Constitution, that religious freedom is enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. In Britain, the head of the Church of England is the Queen, and there's this notion of divine right to rule, which I think has turned a lot of people off from certainly organized Christianity in Britain. So there's a confluence of factors, I think, which have left Britain in the state it's in. I can't comment on the rest of Europe because I don't know enough about it. But I think in comparison to the US, I'm a great fan of the US Constitution. I love the notion of a written constitution and the way that the US Constitution enshrines certain rights and in particular religious freedoms. So I think that those are... Obviously, we could talk about this all night, and I'm sure we would enjoy to have a lengthy conversation on the subject. But I think those are some of the key differences between Britain and the US. Obviously, Andre, I don't know exactly what the situation is in Canada, because I believe the Queen is the head of state in Canada. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I think she is.
Largely figurehead, yes, but
right.
True in through her governor general.
Right, that's it.
But largely a figurehead position.
Okay.
Prime Minister does hold the power. The Governor General does step out of the way, but we defer to the Queen through the Governor General. We still allow that honorific kind of we wait for the Governor General to speak, and the Queen does make an address through the Governor General to the Parliament every year and on various occasions and that kind of thing. So it's a very interesting and a very controversial connection for most Canadians. Some love it, some hate it. There's nobody sitting on the fence.
Yeah, but I think that, again, putting aside the political factors, I think just purely in terms of the religious consequences, my sort of opinion, repeating myself, is that that religious freedom enshrined in the US Constitution is critical, and I'm not aware of any other country that has that.
That's all important. I mean, it is so fundamental to who we are, and it always is interesting to me when even religionists in this country would seek to take that right away from others. And it just shows there's an ignorance of the history that kind of created this country. It was really largely based on that. The whole revolution was largely based on that. The right to believe.
Right.
What you want to believe, you know, it's a fundamental right of free will, really. It's like humanity standing up for free will. And what you believe, right or wrong, it's fundamental that you have the ability to believe what you believe. You can't control a person's thoughts. We keep trying, but You know, it just can't be done. And one of the I think the most beautiful quotes from the Urantia book for me is the one about God refusing, absolutely refusing to coerce the spiritual free wills of his children, of his creatures. And that, you know, our decision to come to him of our own free will is the only gift we can give him that has value.
Hmm.
You know, being a parent, for my child to trust me and love me and come to me because she or he knows that I have their best interest at heart and because he or she believes in me, that means so much more to me than to have my child come to me because they feel coerced or frightened of what I might do if they don't. You know, that's a very shallow concept to be forced to believe something out of fear.
And if you look at, you know, some of the horrors of European history in terms of lack of religious freedom, you look at, for example, you know, without wishing to pick on the Catholics, I'm from a Catholic background, I went to a Catholic school, so I'm not picking on Catholicism in particular, but you look at the Inquisitions and all of these horrors, compare that to the US freedom. And then now this is just pure speculation, but I sometimes wonder if this is why the US was chosen as the location for the Urantia book to be channeled, transcribed, whatever words that you want to use. And I wonder if that was part of the reason that the US was chosen, because of religious freedom.
I think I've heard a lot of people say yes, they feel that it is, and I've also heard that you know, women's rights were another factor.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Whatever all the factors, I mean, clearly those the idea of greater liberty, greater freedom, greater religious and political liberty, also possibly the idea that the cultural tradition of, I mean, there was a certain amount of cultural tradition upholding those things as well, those freedoms, but the fact that people enshrined those in their hearts as well was important. It's important to note, though, that it wasn't all people. You know, we've had, you know, Puritan backlashes and witch burnings and all kinds of things before the founding of this country fully took hold.
Right.
And even afterward, obviously, we've had all the racial crises and the Civil War and many other things that have happened. But throughout all of that, it seems that this ideal keeps growing, even as the composition, the religious composition of the United States changes, it starts to adapt, and you get interesting controversies developing, like some people referring back, well, the founding fathers were speaking as Christians to Christians and all this kind of thing, when in fact that may be the case, but the Constitution was written broadly for a reason, to include other kinds of situations, and maybe they didn't consider all the situations that came in, but there was wisdom in allowing for the freedom of speech and freedom of religion, and putting those actually in the same amendment.
Well, and I'd like to invite Ranjini back in, Angel,
right,
back into the conversation. Angel, are you still with us? Hi.
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. You know, I don't want to embarrass you here, but I think that you really have something to add to this conversation, especially as it comes to the freedom, basic freedoms that, say, those of us in the West enjoy that perhaps you don't. And I'm going to point out one very important one, and if you're not comfortable with it, that's fine. You don't have to speak to it, but It's so basic that for us in my culture that we would be able to pick our own mate. We would have the right to pick a husband or a wife based on natural attractions and other factors that just make us want to come together and devote our lives to each other. But even now, you face the reality that your family will pick a mate for you. And this
yes.
your faith in Jesus and your unusual beliefs in your Hindu neighborhood there or your Hindu culture makes it difficult now for you to find somebody compatible or for your family to find somebody compatible for you. Do you want to speak to that a little bit, Angel? I know it's kind of maybe difficult, but it would just be so nice to hear your thoughts on that.
Yes, here, maybe 50% of the marriages are arranged marriages. My parents are searching my groom for me, and 27 is a very big age in our society. So it will make a lot of trouble in our society. And if you love someone, maybe your parents is not don't accept that. Because, you know, here, if it is a marriage thought, they will ask about what is their job, what are their family background, their caste, their religion, those kind of things are very, very important. So it's difficult to find it. Here, maybe all of them follow their parents' story. But they will ask you if you like this person or not. It's a 2 or 3 minute conversation. I met lots of people. Most of them don't like me. Maybe, I don't know. So they just came to our home to get friends or a parent. That person will ask me, just asked me a lot of questions. Where did you study and what are you doing? It's like that. I give answers, maybe 1 minute or 2 minutes, that conversation will end. And then they will ask about my dowry thing, our family background, just like that, and they will fix they need me or not. Dowry is an important thing. If your parents are ready to give more money, it will be easy to get a good educator, a good family man for you. But your parents can't give more money, maybe you will get a less educated as poor person.
So it's
difficult to understand, isn't it?
So how do you view that when you're actually witnessing and hearing some of those conversations, and from your present perspective and what you've learned, you know, over these last months and years, what comes up for you with regard to your sense of what's possible for you in marriage or in some kind of relationship with a partner in life?
Andre, maybe you can reiterate what Angel said for our listeners, just in case they didn't hear everything she said. Reiterate it a bit.
I'm not sure that I can reiterate everything that she said, but for instance, part of what you were referring to, Angel, was the fact that conversation goes to many, many kinds of things that may be more important for people in your culture than they are for you anymore. For instance, the idea of dowry is very, very important in culture,
right.
Correct?
Yes. Yes.
And that caste system that you mentioned earlier, I think Sean mentioned the caste system. But
well, it's
ahead,
just
Andre.
Like there's a joke. Isn't there kind of a joke among at least, you know, some Indian women that what is important in marriage is in one four-letter word, gold, gold, gold. am I overstating that, or I once saw a documentary on dowries in India, and it was lighthearted. It wasn't taking it too seriously, but would you say that it's accurate that a lot of discussion will be on the material aspects of bringing the two people together? Is that right?
Yes, the groom's parents will just ask my mother, my father tell them how much gold you will give and how much money, how much gold. And after the marriage, my dad must give lots of trophy, bed clothes, and lots of things. It's a big deal for parents. That's why maybe 10 or 20 years before, if a girl said, lots of people killed there, a baby girl, in tribal areas, because they don't have enough dowry to get married their daughter.
Right.
So the fear is then they'll be dependent for their whole lives, and not be able to, not be married, and not be out from under their father and mother's care. So they would prefer to just kill their female children, babies, than to have them and face the reality that they may never be married because of the various things. And I only bring this up because, I was in India about 4 years ago, and I worked a book fair in Delhi, and our guide there, until you're faced with this reality as a Western woman, and as a woman who, with all my heart, believes in the equality of men and women, to me it's a no-brainer. But I also fully realize that a lot of the world doesn't see it that way. And one of the most beautiful things that the Urantia book ever told me, and there were certain truths in the Urantia book that were affirmed to me as I read it, that literally many, many times brought me to tears of absolute joy in the revelation of truth. And one of the things it says is that as the universe looks at worlds like ours, it doesn't consider them out of barbarism until one sex ceases to tyrannize over the other. And that's exactly the way it puts it. Until one sex ceases to tyrannize over the other. And I myself adopted a beautiful baby girl from China in 1996. And she's, just the joy of my life. I have three children. I have two children who were grown when we adopted Mei Li from China. And it's ironic to me that more value would be placed on the male of the species because he carries the family name, but the female carries the family. You know what I mean? Without the female, there is no family. So, and I make light of it, but it's really not, I hearken back to Jesus' words, and my heart is going out to you, Angel, because, I know that you want to get married and you want to have children. It's very important to you, as it is to most females. It's something just ingrained in us. And, this guide that we had when we were in India, her father put an ad in the paper to find a husband for her. And both of this couple, they took us around. They took very good care of us when we were in India. And they made sure that we, knew the ropes. And it was really important to have them there for us. But she confided in me how hard it was and that she didn't love her husband. He was really essentially a total stranger to her when her father picked him. He put an ad in the paper, and he interviewed men, and he decided this is the man for my daughter, and he picked her, and so she was forced to live in a situation that to her was not tolerable, but she had no choice. And you know, she of course was Hindu, and she accepted his Hindu faith. But from your point of view, I can understand how it would just be very, very difficult. And you've shared with me that, you know, you love to study with Grandpa every day. It's one of the things that you look forward to the most. And your fear that if your father should find a husband for you, he wouldn't let you do this. He would somehow resent the time that you spend with Grandpa, with Larry, whom I know has become a very dear person in your life, and I'd love to get him on the phone. Do you think we should try to get him on the phone?
Yeah.
Go for it.
You want us to try to get Grandpa on here with us? We love
okay.
him.
Do you
go
want
ahead,
to ask him to call him?
Let me see if I can. Andre assures me that I can call him from here. So I'm going to
yep.
just see what happens here. Let's try it. We're going to dial.
This is the magic of Blog Talk Radio. And while Paula's doing that, I'm going to station identify and let our listeners know that you're listening to Blog Talk Radio, The Cosmic Citizen. Our episode today is A Hindu Girl Finds Jesus Online. And we might add parenthetically and subtitle this, And an English bloke finds the Urantia book online.
An English,
English bloke. Excellent. Excellent vernacular.
Okay, it's dialing Larry. Let's see what happens here.
This
if we
is
can
a first
get it.
In Blog Talk history.
Hi there.
Hey, Larry,
well, hello,
you
Larry.
Are on with us. It is Grandpa. Look, Angel,
hi, Grandpa.
I think Angel's doing an excellent job. She's this was very traumatic for her. As she says, she's just a village girl, and being able to speak English, for one thing, is a big accomplishment for her. But to be able to express the thoughts that are on her mind, that's a real important step for her, and I'm glad she's had this opportunity.
Well,
that's
has,
wonderful for you to say that, Larry.
Yeah.
You know, I think Paula was probably about to jump in, and I will too. I can't tell you how passionately many of us feel about Angel's faith and fervor.
Yes.
It brings many, many, many of us online to tears at times. To see her faith, and I don't think there's one of us that regards Angel as a simple village girl. We all regard
it.
Angel as a bright light
yes.
on our planet,
yes.
and maybe one of the brightest lights in southern India.
Well, certainly
and
one of the brightest I have ever come across, because it takes more than just someone that you like to chat with to keep us together for, well, we're going on 4 years pretty much daily on Skype, several hours a day. And it's not, if she was just a nice person, I would have got tired of her a long time ago.
That's funny. There you go, Angel. See how much Grandpa loves you.
Well, and we hope that we can inspire people to not only check on our Facebook page, where she does a lovely job, but also her blog, where she pours out her heart. She's probably a little dissatisfied with what she's been able to relate today, because she has high expectations. And she really wants to talk about Jesus and what Jesus means to her. And when we are reading the Urantia book, she'll say, well, that's the scientific part. I want to know how does it actually talk to you personally. So for her focus is what is affecting you on a personal level rather than what's affecting your mind.
Good
well,
for you, Ranjini. Good for
yeah.
you.
And Larry, can anybody join your Skype group? I mean, I have joined in. Joanne and I used to join in on a regular basis on Wednesday mornings, and because my new president, the new president of the fellowship, wants to do a status meeting every Wednesday morning, I can't do that anymore. But can anybody, like, could Sean join you guys on Skype? Could I join you guys on Skype anytime? You open to having other people join?
Pretty much anytime. In fact, if somebody's going to join us, we'll do a better job of making sure that we're reading and discussing the Arantia book, because often our discussions just kind of drift. But we do meet with Justin Reed rather frequently. Whenever somebody has time, and it's usually for us, it's between like 9 o'clock and 10:30 Mountain Time in the morning, which is her night time since she's almost directly on the opposite side of the world.
On the opposite side of the earth, yeah.
We're always happy to get to meet new people, and even though we're at the currently we're reading what she terms the scientific parts of the book, she always comes up with some really good insights and understandings from our discussion. So it's a good thing for us as well as for anybody that we can include with our talk.
Can you tell us quickly how we might be able to join into your online Skype study group?
Yeah, sure. Probably the best thing is to send an email. Angel, give them your email address.
heavenlygeeky5@gmail.com.
I couldn't quite understand that. Could you say that again?
Could you spell it out, Angel?
Okay, heavenlygeeky5@gmail.com. heavenlygeeky5@gmail.com. And my Skype name is angeljohn15.
Okay, so that's heavenlyjesus5.
Did you get those?
heavenlyjesus5@gmail.com. That's Angel's email, and Angel John at Skype?
15.
Angel John 15. That's your Skype username. Okay, great.
So sure, just let us know that you're interested in meeting with us, and it's probably easiest getting connected first through email, and then we'll connect through Skype.
And you're also on pretty active on Facebook, aren't you, Angel? What are some of the groups that you participate in the most there?
I don't understand any of
you. Angel, on what groups are you participating on Facebook?
A lot of groups. The Urantia group. The Urantia group, the pre-connection, the Urantia International, the Urantia Facebook.com, a lot of those.
You're pretty much on all of them that I've noticed, and
yes,
and it's wonderful.
I
and
I to talk about these. I don't get enough chances to share it with, so the Facebook and my blog is the only way.
And your actual Facebook page where you post, you like to post deeply spiritual messages and messages from the Arantia book, and you post beautiful pictures, and that's Angel John too, right? If they just looked up Angel John on Facebook, they could find your page.
Yes.
And your blog,
it does
and
sure.
your blog
really
is
nice.
Angel John.
Angel
Go ahead,
John.
Andre. I'm sorry. Okay.
No, you're fine. I was just looking to see if Angel has gotten a, what do you call it, a discreet Facebook name on, you know, so that it's like facebook.com Angel John, or I'm trying to go there now and just, yeah, it's facebook.com/angel.john.399, and you'll get Angel John's Facebook page.
Right, and Angel John, and that's just angeljohn.org, is her blog.
I'm gonna go. Okay.
Yeah, that's her blog.
And Larry, you helped her set up this blog, and it's just so beautiful. I loved and mentioned that.
Well,
this.
Thank you. Actually, all of the beautiful work has been hers. All I've really done is helped her get started.
Give her a place to put it. Right?
She's really good at her internet work. So I'm just kind of here to help her along, and she's doing it all on her own.
Well, bravo.
So without Grandpa, I can't write that because I make all lots of grammar mistakes.
Well, when she does write something, she gives it to me first, and I punctuate it and change the tenses here and there. But other than that, it's all her writing.
You are a very good writer, Larry. I do appreciate your writing skills. And I wanted to mention something that Angel, you know, if you communicate with her, she'll put you on her mailing list. And from time to time, she sends out the most wonderful things. And the other day, she sent out a little PowerPoint presentation, I guess, about proof of God's existence. And Angel, I was just so touched by that because what it is it's so simply powerful, and it's going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier, atheism and how if you believe in God, you're just silly in many people's points of view. But this is the proof of God, and it just shows, you know, things that man has created, and then right next to it shows things that God has created. And it's so powerful in its simplicity to get you to realize that we think that these things that men have created are no accident, but then we turn and look, man may have created a robot or an automaton, but then we look at this creation of the human body, how magnificent it is, and say that it's an accident. It's very,
right.
Very powerful. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I got that from Uncle Christian.
Where did you get it?
Christian Solomon. I called him and he sent it to me.
Oh, it's really beautiful. I just enjoyed watching it.
We've got on her blog, whenever we come across a short video or presentation like that, we'll put it in the video section of her blog. She's got about close to 50 really quite inspirational and fun videos on there, so it's a good place for someone just to take a break and watch a fun video or get an inspiration for the day.
And they're always so positive, Angel. I love that. Your message, whatever your message is, whatever you send out, it's always a message of love, and it's always a message of upliftment. So deeply, deeply appreciate that. We need more of that. You know, we need more of the positive. There's so much negative in the world and so much, you know, what I would call recrimination, you know, people pointing fingers at each other and blaming each other for everything. And it's just so uplifting to see your offerings. Thank you.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity.
You know, when we first met through Truth Book, she said her name was Angel John, and I thought, well, being an angel is a little bit presumptuous. But it's not, it certainly isn't. She's the embodiment of what an angel would be telling us if they were speaking directly to us. So she's earned that name very, very well.
Well, and you're no, you're go ahead, Angel.
I just dear Angel is common name for Christian. I really like that name.
Yes. Well, and it is. It's a good name. It's an appropriate name for you. And I know Larry so well. I've known him for many years. He's a scientist in his own right. He's not a person
yes.
who just falls for anything. And you have really captured his heart. And I want to share a little story with our listeners, because here's something else that you might not realize when the East meets the West and the difficulties that may arise. But 2 years ago, when the Urantia Book Fellowship did IC11, our international conference, IC stands for International Conference, in 2011, Larry deeply wanted to bring Angel to that conference. It was in Salt Lake City. And he made all the arrangements for her to come. And actually, she was going to come with her friend Lali, who is an independent woman in India, and she's a woman of her own means. And there was every reason for Angel to be able to come to our conference, every reason for her to come, and no reason why she shouldn't be able to come. And she had to take off 2 days of work with Lali to take a train ride very far away from where she lives to go to, the U.S. consulate with a visa application. And it was a big deal. We all thought we had a letter of invitation for her. We had all the arrangements made. Everything was paid for. We thought that it was... With open hearts, we thought it was a slam dunk. And after two days of a ride on a train, please correct me, Larry, anytime if I'm not exactly correct in these details. She got to the consulate, and the man there didn't even bother to look at the application; just stamped it rejected offhand. And so, the dream of being able to come and participate in a conference with the rest of us was smashed. And it was very, very
She said it was less than 2 minutes that she was in front of the clerk, and they just saw that she was a young, unmarried woman, even though she was going to be traveling with a chaperone. And said that no, that the U.S. doesn't accept them. Now, I think they're afraid that they'll come and get married here. So yeah, with the beach, I was really disappointed. And I thought, oh, this is going to be devastating to her. But, well, she was unhappy, but it wasn't as devastating as it was to me. I think she took it very well. She's not a crier.
No, she's a prayer. And every time that I have joined Angel and Larry on Skype, Angel always prays for us, and it's really a beautiful thing. And she'll put on her prayer shawl. And Skype is really an amazing thing, because we can actually see each other. So here we are in different parts of the world, actually meeting face to face. It's really quite extraordinary, and it's wonderful to see Angel put on her prayer shawl and say a prayer for all of us. So. But yeah, I don't think a lot of people realize how hard it would be, even for somebody with the obvious integrity of Angel, to be able to come and participate in a religious conference in the United States. It was quite an ordeal, even just to get to the point where she was in front of a clerk and he just, within a minute, rejected her. Yeah. And I like people to realize that. It's foreboding to be able.
Well, I'm watching her on Skype right now. She's walking back and forth and
So we know that someone like Sean might be able to come to a conference easily. And Sean, I hope to meet you sometime. That would be wonderful. But if not, maybe we can meet on Skype. That would be, you know, such a treat. So,
apologies. Yeah, I would love to do that. Could I get your Skype name, please, Paula? Email it to me if you don't want to put it out.
No, I'm happy to. Did you actually get Larry and Angel's?
No, I've got Angel's because I managed to make a note of it. But maybe I must have missed Larry's. But if I could take yours and Larry's, and yeah, I mean at some point I do hope to actually meet you face to face. But I don't know when I'll be able to get out to the States. It may be some time. But in the meantime, yeah, Skype. So if I could take yours and Larry's. That would be great.
Yeah, mine is simple. It's the same as my email address. It's just ubooksrus, UBOOKSRUS.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my Skype account.
Great. And could I take Larry?
I can tell. My Skype name is Larry.Watkins, all lowercase. So.
Larry.Watkins. Okay. Well, guys, invitations, then that would be great.
And I know, Krislyn, you do too, right? And Andre, you both do Skype as well. So
yeah, I've sent Krislyn an invitation, so I'm hoping that she'll.
I don't get on Skype very often. I keep mine turned off because I've just had too many spam issues with leaving it on. But
okay.
I will go and take a look and see to find you.
Okay, great. And could I take yours as well, please, Andre?
Absolutely. If I can just remember it. I believe it's just simply A. Redatus.
Okay. Excellent.
So this whole notion of meeting on Skype, I think, is really powerful and wonderful, and a lot of readers are doing it. I know Pat O'Banton has a study group on Skype, and several study groups, like Chris Halverson's study group on Friday nights in Boulder, actually is Skyped. So it's a great technology and a good way to connect.
Is Chris Halverson's podcast Skype group open to new members, or is that just a sort of a closed one for existing people only?
I think they've started to do a webinar, is what I've just seen for that. And I can show you that link. They now request that you, and Larry would probably know. Larry, are you still going up there?
I haven't gone to Chris's study group for quite some time because I got to the point where I was having trouble driving at night, and it's an interesting road between Lakewood and Boulder.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
One of the most dangerous roads in all of Colorado.
Yeah, I used to have to
drive
it.
I still like driving on it, but I do it during the daytime.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, I can get you that information, Sean. I just, as a matter of fact, ran across it today. It was... We can talk at the end of the podcast or at the end of the broadcast, the webcast here.
Okay.
And I can do that, or I can just get in touch with you online and send you that link.
Great. Okay. But I do think Skype is a great medium because obviously for people like me and also for Angel, obviously it's a long way to the US and we've got the challenges of crossing the dealing with U.S. immigration, and there's obviously the cost factors. So I think Skype is a great way to get going.
And speaking for most of the readers I know, I think that any of us, all of us, love the fact that you guys have found the Urantia book online, and as Larry illustrates, are more than willing to meet and help in any way we can. You know, I think what floats our boat really, and I say this only because I've met so many Urantia book readers in the United States and gotten to know so many and heard their sentiments and their emotions about this, is that, you know, it changed our lives. It improved our lives in every possible way. And what really excites us is the aspect of being able to share that and help others find that and study it. It's just a thrill. And so that's our main motivation, just so you know, if you want to contact us.
One of the comments I heard very recently was that most people who are genuinely happy seem to have a strong faith at the root of it. And most people who are profoundly unhappy seem to have a lot of what their purpose in life is, what their relationship to the universe is. And I think that's one of the things the Urantia book offers us through the teachings of Jesus, is how joyful one can be when our eternal goals are clarified.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that one of the things that sums it up for me is that great quote from the book about, what is it with the cyclonic? Let me look it up real quick. It's just so beautiful. And it encapsulates what you just said, Crystalline. It's from paper 99, which is, and I'll tell you what that paper is. It says, Social Problems of Religion. It says, during the psychologically unsettled times of the 20th century and now the 21st century, amid the economic upheavals, the moral cross currents, and the sociologic riptides of the cyclonic transitions of a scientific era, thousands upon thousands of men and women have become humanly dislocated. They are anxious, restless, fearful, uncertain, and unsettled. As never before in the world's history, they need the consolation and stabilization of sound religion. In the face of unprecedented scientific achievement and mechanical development, there is spiritual stagnation and philosophic chaos. That's what I witness. I don't know about the rest of you guys, but it rings true to me because I see it.
Well, and I find, too, that many of the atheists with whom I counsel or that I've run across are really proud of their status as atheists. And they seem to be completely disconnected from the fact that that seems to be the core of so much of their unhappiness.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
And I would like to give Angel an opportunity to just, because I don't think she's going to be able to stay online with us much longer, to be able to express to us her love for Jesus. And Angel, you know, in this era when people aren't even sure if Jesus is real, what would you like to say to us about Jesus?
About Jesus?
Yes, and about your faith in Jesus and why you love him so much.
I love Jesus more than anything in this world because he changed my life. I mean, I have lots of problems in my life, my marriage, and it's a big deal, and lots of other troubles too, but I am very, very happy about this life, and I'm very happy to see my grandpa, and we just pray together, we read the book together, and that helps me to do almost instantly. And whenever I get the chance to talk about, because I would like to talk about these two animals. I just don't know how to explain this in my life. Without me, I don't know, I am not. My life was in this darkness, and this is the need of life. And there's this person with the things around me, and he gave me my family. And now I have a beautiful family, a good, very beautiful, spiritual family on the other side of the world. I got lots of mama, son, grandpa. It's so beautiful. I miss lots of love in my life. This 27th year, I'm getting all that love back. I'm so happy.
These are beautiful sentiments.
Thank you, Angel. And thank you for joining us all the way from India. It's probably, what, midnight where you're at?
What?
Is it late at night?
What time is it there?
11.
Yeah. Well, we love you, sweetheart, and we pray for your continued ministry, and
thank you
so much. Thank you so much for joining us, Angel, and you did a beautiful job, and don't apologize for your English. Your English is wonderful. I wish I could speak.
I want to hear that again. Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to talk about Jesus.
Oh, of course.
I love you all, and may God bless you all.
Thank you, dear.
Thank you, Angel.
We love you, too.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Bye, Angel.
Bye-bye.
Very nice. Well, I'll hang up, too, and let you finish the program with your other guest.
Thank you very much, Larry, for joining us.
Yeah, I'm glad to be able to talk to you. It's always nice to be able to hear you, Andre, and Paula, and Crystal. And thank you
for everything, my friend. It just gives me an opportunity to thank you for being a comrade and a partner in ministry and outreach all these years. You really are a hero, and I so deeply appreciate you.
Well,
and
thank you
for all your technical support on this show.
Yes.
So many urgent calls at, 5 minutes to 10. Help, Larry, help.
What do I do?
Oh, well. Okay, thanks and goodbye.
Talk to you later.
Bye for now.
Bye now.
Larry is a humble fellow.
Well, in the earlier
humble
days of the show, we had a lot more technical problems than we do today. But Larry was frequently disturbed early on Saturday mornings with desperate calls from me when I was trying to run the show alone when Paula was off. Inevitably, every time something went wrong.
He's always there. He's always willing to help and lend his talents and abilities. Just, Larry's retired from IBM, so he does have that geeky thing going on, which is really
Yay.
Nice. I love it. Yeah. Hooray for
we
geeks.
We love geeks
love
over
and,
here.
Yeah. Yeah, they are my heroes because I see the potential of the technology that we have in front of us. And people like Larry help us access that and understand it and use it to its fullest. So, hooray.
And if not for that, several people would not have had the amazing experience of finding this book.
Right.
Well, speaking of many of those people, Sean, are you still with us?
I am indeed. Hello.
So, Mike.
Jump in on me. So if you hear screaming in the background, it means my children have run into the room. So I'll...
Okay.
Well, since we have the benefit of having you on for the next... we have about 12 minutes left in the show. I am interested, since we have been talking about some of the international issues, that we have going of trying to promulgate just the gospel of the brotherhood of the fatherhood of God and the brotherhood of man to the rest of the world and Europe and England specifically. But we also have the idea of getting something like the Urantia book promulgated throughout Britain in this climate. And do you have any thoughts? Is there anything, as we've been talking, that's brewing in your own mind that may be an inkling of a direction of something we might pursue in trying to accomplish that?
Yeah, I think the first one is to push the Skype thing. And if you, the suggestion I would make is to put out Skype names and encourage people to organize Skype groups. I should mention that I was very fortunate to get the opportunity to meet Europe, who I spoke with on your podcast a few weeks ago.
To meet with who?
Neil Waldrop.
Oh yeah.
Oh yes.
Yeah, and it
was
great.
You met him when he came over for the UAI group?
Yeah, I spoke with you guys on the Saturday, and literally Neil was flying over a couple of days later, and I literally met him on Wednesday. So I got to spend the day with him, and I'm actually due to speak with Neil tomorrow by Skype to discuss how we can go about getting more Skype groups set up. But for me, I think that's critical, because I think there are people, I know there are people in the UK that I think would be interested, but it's so difficult to get the time. People working so hard these days,
and
they just don't have the time. But I think a Skype group is great, and a Skype group could be just almost, it's quite informal, it's free, and I think that, and I've got other ideas, but that for me is a central one.
Well, I did a Skype group for a special interest, sort of a subgroup of your Urantia Book readers a couple years ago, and it went really well. And that would be something that I would be very willing to do again.
Where was that, Kristen? In the U.S. or in the U.K.?
I did a group for LDS students of the Urantia Book. There was a woman in my study group locally who was sort of the catalyst for getting that going. And I had met several other people who were Mormon Urantia Book readers.
Right.
And so some of them had special interests that weren't being met in other groups. And although I'm not a Mormon myself, I had some experience with that culture. And so I just agreed to sort of be the moderator for the study group.
And I often think that, with people with different religious opinions, we and from different religions, we've got more in common than we have, I think, with atheists. Because a good friend of mine who's a devout Muslim, and he loves to talk about, he's very interested in Christianity, and he's very interested in different religions. And interestingly, even though he's a devout Muslim, he's actually, very open-minded with regard to his children. He doesn't try and push it onto them, and he lets them, come to their own decision. So I think that, I know it's a sort of awful cliche to talk about interfaith dialogue. It sounds awfully cliched and PC.
Oh, not to us.
Well, but I think it's very important, and that particularly in as I said, in a society like my home too, but in a society where a lot of people seem to worship the god of money, and there is a thirst for other avenues. I think a good way to spread the teachings of the Urantia Book.
My 15-year-old granddaughter said to her dad the other day, "Some people are so poor, all they have is money."
Out of the mouth of babes.
Yeah,
out of the mouth of babes.
Because there is a poverty, I it reminds me of what Mother Teresa said once when someone asked her, "Why do you come to America? There is no real poverty in America, not like in India." And her response was, "Oh yes, there is a poverty. It's a different kind of poverty. It's a spiritual poverty." And I don't think we think in terms of that. We don't even think the spirit is being real, which is always astonishing to me, because it is divinely real. It is the most real thing. We think of this material substance as being real and the spirit being a fairy story, but the spirit is what's behind all of it. And without spirit, there is none of it. So it's like the Urantia book says, you know, material is but the shadow of the greater reality of spirit. And
my mom was having a rough week this last week. And she said, yeah, you know, yesterday I was really, really feeling down. And she said, I thought to myself, my gosh, I just closed on my condo. I had like $60,000 in the bank for the first time in my life. And she says, it didn't do it for me.
It just didn't do it, yeah.
It just didn't do it for me. And I said, well, you know, we didn't really grow up valuing money.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in more of a mission community, we really weren't geared that way. And that has been a particular challenge for succeeding in a Western culture. Because it's like, and I think a lot of other people see us as being incredibly naive or just downright foolish for not really getting on that bandwagon. And I think it goes along with what I said earlier about sort of this idea of atheism as being something to be really proud of and be very self-assured about.
Well, it's I think on that subject of atheism, it's partly a connection with the intellect, and which is that I think there's a notion that because it's such a, you know, a brutally competitive society we live in at the moment, that particularly with younger people, the intellect is all there is and anything that should be viewed, and that any suggestion of faith, that deed as a sort of a sign of weakness, really, and and people almost like to attack it because, you know, they think, well, we need to, you know, we need to be demonstrating that we are high IQ, that we can earn lots of money, and that, and we can then have expensive cars and houses and all of those things.
Well, you know, it's interesting to me that we put such a value on intellect, and certainly the Urantia book says the next great bastion for humankind is to achieve a quality of thinking, and it tells us that our thoughts are what leads us Godward. But by the same token, there's a reality of love that you cannot explain.
Yeah.
And try as you might to describe to somebody or prove to somebody that you love, or describe the experience of love and what that feels like, you can. And that's because it is a reality of the spirit and it is a reality of the heart. And Jesus many times said, the kingdom of heaven is in the hearts of men. And I think that for humankind, we need to embrace each other with our heart, not just with our mind. We need to let it go one step deeper to the level of our heart. And allow ourselves to feel for each other, not just
think
about each other.
Well, and I'm not by any means down on the mind.
No,
you know?
I'm not either.
I greatly value the depth of quality thinking and intellectual discussion that happens at study groups and that happens with my Urantian friends. But there's a caliber of thinking that goes along with incorporating the spiritual along with the intellectual that is really profoundly satisfying.
Yes.
Well, you may not be down on mind, but you are down on time. So we have 60 seconds to go.
Excellent.
And Sean, just let me express how great it is to have you on the call with us. And thank you so much for calling. And every time you call, it's always a welcome addition to our show, and we really appreciate it.
Great.
Thanks
for
hanging in.
Yeah, thank you, and I've really enjoyed it. Take care.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
See you soon, guys.
God bless, Sean.
Bye-bye.
Nice to hear from you always. Well, friends, we're at the end of another show, and we hope you've enjoyed it. You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen on Blog Talk Radio, and we hope you'll tune in with us next week. We'll let you know what we're going to be talking about. We post on Facebook on our page, Friends of the Cosmic Citizen, so you can always tune in there and find out what we're going to be doing. And I'd like to say thank you to Andre Redatus and Crystalline Beek Larson, my comrades in this adventure.
Well, thank you to both of you.
Yeah.
This is always a pleasure. Bye for now, everyone.
And bye for now. God bless.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.